How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the Layover Podcast on the Boston Network. We have an exciting guest for you guys today. Andy Tretiak is the Chief Marketing Officer of AirShare. Prior to AirShare, he founded Brand Propulsion and was a marketing leader at Sporting Kansas City during their rebrand, and also held leadership marketing positions at Fan360 and Barclay. We're here to talk about AirShare's recent integration in the Ryder Cup, talk to Andy a little bit about his experience as a traveler himself and some of the places that he's looking forward to checking out. Andy, thanks so much for coming on, man.
Thanks for having me.
So let's talk a little bit about how you got into the travel marketing world. I know you came up through the sports side of the business and then eventually ended up at AirShare and helped lay the rebrand of that company. So yeah, just tell us a little bit about where you grew up, where'd you go to school, and what got you into the marketing and the travel world.
Sure. It wasn't a direct path for sure. So grew up in Omaha and then moved to Kansas City when I was 13 years old. Went to school at the University of Missouri and studied initially journalism, and then decided that I was more interested in the creative side and went into graphic design. And that was my first job out of college in advertising, working in the creative department. Quickly realized I was pretty average when it came to design, but I loved the creative aspect of what I did. So ended up moving on to a larger agency, Barclay. I was actually at Barclay twice. The first time I was there, I was in account management. I was really kind of learning the strategic side of advertising and how creative fit in with that. And then shortly thereafter, some people that I had worked with at Barclays spun off a sports marketing agency. And I was very interested in applying the skills that I had learned within advertising to a subject matter that I really love, which certainly sports, you know, fit into that category. So I was with the sports marketing agency for several years. Then Barclays bought us back. So I'm back at Barclays. In the meantime, we started working with what was then the Kansas City Wizards, which had become Sporting Kansas City later on, one of the original MLS clubs. They had kind of sputtered from the outset. They were a team that really didn't have a lot of fandom within Kansas City. Soccer hadn't really taken over within the market yet. They were working with the Chiefs because they had shared ownership, and they weren't really getting a lot of the attention that they needed to be able to grow. They took on new ownership and decided to rebrand. And at that same time, we started taking on some projects with them. And it was one of those classic one thing leads to another stories where I got involved because of my sports marketing background, and they needed more help on the rebrand side beyond just what the logo may look like, but really what the DNA of the team and the club was going to be. And so I started working with them on that a little bit. And then they offered me a chance to come in and do it full time. And, you know, you don't get many opportunities to rebrand a sports team and open a new stadium, which we did. You know, that was a pretty big deal within Kansas City and also within the league. It was a, you know, new stadium, soccer specific, that you hadn't really seen yet. Now you see every team that's coming into the league. It's mandatory. Back then it wasn't. It was a lot of football stadiums that were being converted into soccer stadiums or other venues. So to be able to do that and then build a marketing team from scratch was really exciting. And so I learned soccer. Was not a player growing up. I played more of the stick and ball sports, and I had to learn soccer, but really got excited about it. And, you know, we, through the rebrand, really grew Sporting into something that has become really one of the model franchises within soccer. So how does that connect with AirShare? Well, part of our ownership group at Sporting Kansas City had recently become controlling owners of what was then Executive AirShare. And so when I went off on my own and started my own agency that was part of a conglomerate of other disciplines, it was somewhat of a fractional CMO type of offering. I started working with, you know, Executive AirShare, and our CFO at the time had just moved into the CEO role, and he and I had a good relationship. We worked really well together, and was one of those things again where hadn't really planned on going to work for another company again. I really enjoyed being off on my own and starting to build this fractional CMO agency, but really felt like there was a tremendous opportunity for what was now going to be AirShare. And the potential was certainly there, and the right people were starting to get into place, and was definitely bullish on the prospects for it. And so took a chance, and 7 years later, here I am. So now running in marketing and branding and communications for AirShare. And we just celebrated our 25th anniversary, and things are going really well.
That's awesome. Well, I love that story. Love kind of the pivot between agency world. And, I think every agency person wants to think that, someday a client will pluck them out of agency life and bring them in house. And it happens less often than some people think, especially for the C-level title. So I think that says a lot about you that you've been able to navigate that with the politics and the skill sets and everything else, not only once, but twice, kind of within the same client group. But it also speaks a lot to your continuity with, all these players in and around kind of the Kansas City marketing world and sports marketing in general, which you would consider maybe, maybe a market that especially gotten its share of notoriety since the Chiefs fanfare in recent times. But back when you were doing this stuff, that wasn't quite the case.
It wasn't. And to be fair, it started with us. So we won MLS Cup in 2013.
Nice.
And then the Royals went to the World Series in 14, won it in 15. And then the Chiefs, obviously have had success being in the last five Super Bowls, winning three. So it's been an embarrassment of riches for us as sports in Kansas City, which was certainly not the case for several years. We definitely earned it. But now we've been able to experience the joy that comes with winning. We haven't had for a while.
Let's go. Let's go. All right. So, we're here to talk PGA. We're here to talk golf and the Ryder Cup as well. So, tell me a little bit about AirShare's relationship with the PGA and the league and the Ryder Cup. And let's start with just how did your relationship with professional golf start, and why an important vertical you thought the AirShare demographic would align with?
Sure. So AirShare historically has always been involved in golf. We've had relationships with golfers throughout the years. Obviously, our clientele that we're trying to reach through our product certainly aligns very well with the sport, not only those that play it, but also follow it. So that's always been important to us, in addition to other sports properties that we've worked with. But back in 2022, the PGA Championship was being held at Southern Hills in Tulsa. At the time, specifically our fractional program that we offer within AirShare was really focused on the central U.S. in terms of where we sold it. We flew everywhere, not only within the U.S., but internationally as well. But in terms of where we sold, it was specific to that geographic area. So the fact that it was being held in the Midwest, right in our backyard, we felt like, well, this is a great opportunity for us to have another way to get involved with golf, really with the property side versus the player side. So we had started to really develop a good relationship with the PGA. I specifically had got along really well with the director of brand partnerships, John Hanley, from the PGA. And the relationship went really well. We had a great hospitality event throughout the PGA Championship. We were able to do some additional marketing around it, our association with the event. And I had told him that even though we were in the central U.S., we had pretty aggressive plans to continue to expand. And we were going to be a national eventually, but first we're going to go to the East Coast. And knowing the Ryder Cup was going to be in New York in 2025, I told him, let's make sure we stay in contact, because I'm very positive that we're going to want to do something together again around the Ryder Cup. So fast forward to, a couple of years ago, we had started to think about raising capital to help us grow. We had purchased part of another business that helped us grow our aircraft management division nationwide. Our charter services department had already been operating nationwide. The last one to go national was our fractional program, which encompasses fraction ownership and jet cards. And that really is more of a strategic decision in terms of where you sell because of the intricacies around the operational side of that part of the business. So we have to be very thoughtful around where we expand and why, and the timing around that. But we brought in a new group, Compass Capital, that now have become controlling owners. They wanted to help us get really aggressive in expanding our fractional programs nationwide. So everything accelerated, which was great. And so when I started talking to John Handley again about what we might be able to do together with at the Ryder Cup, started to expand into a bigger partnership because we wanted to associate the AirShare brand with a property nationwide that was going to appeal to our target audience, regardless of where they lived, but also demonstrated support for a sport that we share common ground with, that we share both, you know, both of us shared an emotional attachment to. And so we ended up expanding our partnership beyond the Ryder Cup to the PGA of America, which holds the rights to the Ryder Cup, puts on the Ryder Cup on the US side, and then also the PGA Championship. So what we ended up doing is a multi-level partnership that is a multi-year deal that gives us rights to the PGA Championship for 5 years. We're official private aviation provider of the PGA of America, which is kind of the governing body across the U.S. for all the PGA clubs. And then the Ryder Cups in 25 and 29 that are on home soil. So, you know, from that standpoint, we were able to get properties that from a national scale, we could activate across the country. And as we're going into new markets on the West Coast and East Coast, it gives us an opportunity to really promote our brand in association with the property that we know is going to establish immediate credibility for those that don't know us. But then the other piece to this at the micro level was what they call section partnerships. So there are 41 geographic clusters throughout the U.S. of clubs within regions of the U.S. So what we decided to do was focus on four different section partners that we thought would help us aggressively grow our brand awareness in markets where we traditionally had not had a presence in before. So in addition to these large-scale tentpole partnerships with the PGA of America, PGA Championship, the Ryder Cup, we also have local, what we call section partnerships in Southern California, the Southwest, South Florida, and New York Metropolitan, which essentially is Manhattan. So gives us an opportunity to have boots on the ground to establish relationships for our sales team with the leadership in those clubs and those areas, in addition to the golf pros there and the members. And so, you know, those areas and those clubs and clientele represent people that we're trying to reach through our marketing efforts, because, you know, in the end, that's going to lead to revenue for us. You know, we're going to be able to attract customers through those properties. So it really gave us a chance to activate nationally and locally, really getting involved in the communities. And those have gone so well that we're looking at adding some more of those sections even as soon as next year. So all that's gone very, very well.
Wow, that's awesome. Well, it sounds like it's a ever-expanding relationship. It taps into the right consumer. And I want to ask you some questions in a little bit about sports travel, because it's a category that we've been tracking at Lawston. The Wall Street Journal recently launched some research saying that it's a $600 billion category around within the niche of travel. People who travel to either engage in their favorite sports or follow their teams to where they're going, or going to what we call tentpole moments like the Olympics or World Cup. So, and then that's projected to grow to $1.3 trillion by 2030. So it's a huge component of the travel industry, and would love to get your comment on that. But before we do that, could we take a step back? You touched into, but like you mentioned, AirShare is a relatively new brand on a national footing. So there may be some viewers who are unfamiliar with exactly how AirShare works. And the way that I think about it is, you guys are a vertically integrated private aviation company with everything from fleet management, you know, ownership. Like if you own a private jet and you want to charter it out, you guys basically handle all those logistics and allow the owner to kind of just sit back and collect revenue. You have fractional ownership. You have these jet cards, which are essentially kind of a package of travel that you can kind of use at your own discretion. So could you walk the viewer through the different services that you guys offer and how that kind of informs some of your approaches around partnerships?
Sure. Yeah. So we offer a full suite of private aviation solutions nationwide. So I'll start with aircraft management. That's the easiest one to explain. So for those clients that own their own airplane, in most cases, they need someone or an entity to manage that aircraft for them. So what that entails is handling all the maintenance, the insurance, hangaring it, hiring the crew and managing the crew. And in many cases, we have clients who want to charter their airplanes to generate revenue to offset their expenses. And so we have about probably 30% of those that want to take advantage of that opportunity. So we're responsible essentially for their airplanes, just like we would be responsible for our own in our fractional program. So overall, we have a fleet of over 100 aircraft combined across all of our solutions. So eighth largest operator within the U.S. When it comes to private aviation. So then we have fraction ownership and jet cards. So with fraction ownership, you actually own a portion of an airplane that entitles you to, in our case, 20 days usage of that aircraft at your disposal, and you can fly up to 14 hours a day in that aircraft. So so if you think about, you know, being able to fly 20 days, you know, at you know, maximum, most people don't fly that often, but they do take advantage of it. And that's a big differentiator in our fractional programs that we offer in comparison to our competition. But essentially, you own a 16th of that airplane, or we sell a 16th increment in that airplane, and that part is yours. So you take ownership of that part of the airplane. There's depreciation involved with that. You're entitled to 20 days a year, and you have a multi-year contract. But the benefit of our program and the way that fractional programs typically work is you almost rarely fly in the tail that you own in. So you have access to our fractional fleet. So if you and I both own in the same tail and you happen to be flying with your family tomorrow and I want to go take a trip, I will still be able to have access to our fleet, but I may not fly in the plane that I own in, but you may be. So that's the benefit is you have access to that entire fleet. And every day for us operationally on the fractional side really is it's a puzzle that we're trying to, you know, put together when it comes to aligning the demand from our customers with where the airplanes are and where the crew is. So we put all that together every day, and that, you know, that's how we operate fractionally. But it's a benefit to those that want access to private planes, you know, to private travel, but don't want to spend the money to own their own airplane or don't have a need to have their own airplane. So that really just kind of depends on, you know, the specifics associated with, you know, each individual needs of the customer. Our Embark Jet Card is essentially a version of our fractional program that does not involve ownership of any kind. Essentially, you get 10 days access with your jet card, same benefits, you know, associated with being able to fly up to 14 hours in a day, and our ability to interchange into our different aircraft. We feature the Challenger 3500 and the Phenom 300 within our fractional programs for both. But the primary difference between Embark and our jet card and our fractional ownership really is just that there's no commitment long-term. So you still get the ability to fly as much as you want each day. You get less days, but, you know, essentially the programs work fundamentally the same. And then lastly, we offer charter services, not only nationally, but internationally. We've been doing that from the outset. So as I mentioned earlier, we charter some of our own aircraft that we manage. But then in addition to that, we have a worldwide network of charter brokers that we work with to fulfill any needs that our customers have. And a big part of the value proposition of AirShare is the cross usage of the different solutions among our client base. So when you think about customers who are we're managing aircraft for who want to charter. Well, we've got a built-in customer base here that wants to be able to charter to take advantage of that. So they know the people that we work with. So they're vetted to an extent that makes them feel comfortable that the people that are flying on their plane are going to be the clientele that they feel comfortable with. But then we have customers who own their own airplanes that still buy a jet card from us because they may be splitting some of their days off with the business they own, or their family may be taking it. And in some cases, they just need access to visit other business locations or to take annual trips that they may need to do either on the business or leisure side. So you'd be surprised how many customers will buy a $50 million airplane, but still buy a jet card with us because they want some additional lift because the plane just may not be available when they need it.
Yeah, that's interesting. So is the main difference between jet card and fractional ownership that there's like tax benefits of being able to like write down that appreciation? Or is it the jet card you can do for 1 year and then you don't have to work? Like when you're committing to fractional ownership, I imagine you're committing to multiple years because you're probably paying that down over like a 10-year lease or a 10-year contract or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, there's several benefits, on the fractional ownership side versus Embark. There is the tax depreciation that you can take, as the aircraft depreciates over time, as you have your 5-year commitment. But then there are some other elements to it within, the association with, some of the benefits that we offer are specific to the fractional side versus the Embark side. And you get double the amount of days per year than you do on Embark. And with our Embark program, when you buy an Embark card or jet card, you get 2 years to use your 10 days. With the fractional ownership, you get the ability to carry over some of those days year and build those up. So a lot of differences, but inherently the days-based model, the difference between whether you're a fractional owner or a jet card holder with AirShare has a fundamental difference in benefits that we think are at a more premium level than our competition that are typically hours based.
Got it. That makes sense. All right, let's get into Ryder Cup. Okay. So, exciting partnership for you guys this year. Let's talk about how you guys activated during the event itself. So my understanding is that you guys basically brought in some aircraft to position around the island around New York and Long Island to make sure that your folks that were coming there for hospitality not only had a ultra premium experience with Ryder, but also got to sample and taste the brand from the perspective that they got to go on a plane, skip some of the heavy traffic and other ways of commuting in and out of the event itself. But can you talk a little bit about how you guys activated at the event itself?
Yeah, I'll finish with that one because that's certainly the most fun to talk about. But leading up to it, once we signed the deal in the spring, we immediately started planning for how we were going to activate against the Ryder Cup all the way up into the event itself. So, as I mentioned before, we're going into new markets. We're trying to establish more awareness for our brand. And the Ryder Cup being one of the biggest sporting events, in the world, we wanted to be able to take advantage of that as much as possible. So we immediately started developing Ryder Cup themed creative and incorporating our association with the Ryder Cup within our marketing materials so that we could establish that association with the Ryder Cup and the PGA of America from the outset and build up towards the event. So we did that through a variety of different mechanics within some mass media that we're running, some events that we were holding, and some additional tactics that we had already planned to do, but now we are incorporating the Ryder Cup element into it. So to make sure that everything that we were doing, we were positioning AirShare along with the Ryder Cup building up to this event, especially as we were getting closer, getting into, late summer, and there's starting to get more and more buzz about the event happening and people were getting excited about it. So we wanted to be a part of that story. Then when it comes to the event itself, we actually created some display signage at both Teterboro Airport, which is the main airport that services private flyers that are going to Manhattan. We have an FBO there that allowed us to create this large scale display that promoted our association with the Ryder Cup. So anyone that was coming in either for the Ryder Cup or just traveling there, it's, you know, it's one of the most high traffic private aviation airports, you know, in the country. We wanted to be able to see that and be able to promote it. And then at Republic Airport, which is the airport in Farmingdale, that's about 10 minutes away from Bethpage Black, where the Ryder Cup was being held. But majority of the people that were flying into were seeing that. We had a large scrim that welcomed people to the Ryder Cup and had our logo associated with it. So we wanted to be a part of it with the PGA of America, not just being an airshare thing or a PGA of America thing. We wanted to show that we were doing this together. And this is a byproduct of the partnership. So we wanted to, you know, shout that from the mountaintop, so to speak. And as people were coming in, we wanted people to see that and understand the association with it, because they're created a lot of value for us, especially for those that weren't familiar with AirShare. And then, you know, I mentioned, you know, wanting to get to, you know, to the end, to talk about our hospitality. So we entertained 30 guests throughout the weekend, and we had different groups of sales prospects each day. We wanted to give different people a chance to experience what it's like to be at the Ryder Cup each day. And so for those people that are familiar with Long Island and the just the general, you know, traffic headaches associated with Manhattan, it's not an easy place to get to. And so we had a lot of different options that we really had considered, even renting houses in the Hamptons, because that would create a very cool, unique experience, but that's still kind of far away. And so what we decided to do was create an airshare element to how we were going to essentially transport them to the event each day. And so what we decided to do was have everybody stay in Manhattan. We had some additional events that were going on throughout the weekend where we were entertaining our guests. But then when we were taking people to the each round every morning, we actually were driving them the opposite way to Teterboro. And we had a Challenger 3500 staged at our FBO there, and essentially was a ferry. So while most people were driving from the city to Long Island for 2 hours, or were staying somewhere close, but still, you know, having a lot of travel time, we were hopping on a Challenger and flying all over all those people, and then directly at Republic Airport, and we had cars waiting for them, and we had access through our partnership to take them directly to the clubhouse, which is really the epicenter of hospitality there. So literally, we had people get that got picked up, and they were taken from the airport, Republic Airport, directly to the clubhouse. They were able to eat a quick breakfast and walk right into this special area that was dedicated within the grandstand. So, you know, especially Friday, Saturday, the kickoff of each round, they got to see the pageantry and, you know, really that the cool experience of, you know, the Ryder Cup starting, especially on Friday, which was one of the coolest experiences I've ever had. And just as a sports fan, and that really added an airshare touch to it, you know? So not only did it save them a lot of time, and it still was an early morning for sure, but being able to bypass all that traffic and, you know, have this great event to be experienced with, you know, the ultimate level of convenience really fit well with our brand. And that was a great way to showcase the benefits of flying private.
Yeah, that's awesome. And it seems like you guys activated at two key arteries for the private aviation space. You mentioned Teterboro being the largest private aviation in and out of the city of Manhattan. Yeah. And then, so I imagine as important as the opportunity was to have those 30 VIP folks that you guys were entertaining, really to have the presence in the private aviation artery of like other people who are, you know, either private jet owners or people who travel privately, seeing your association with the Ryder Cup at those two airports really was the brand positioning that you guys were looking to drive amongst the rest of the people who might have been flying in and attending on their own jet or with other competitors, but really you guys owning that relationship with PGA and the Ryder Cup.
Yeah, that was the goal, is that we knew that by far the majority of people coming in for this event that were flying private were going to one of those two airports. And so we wanted to make sure we had a physical presence there beyond seeing our airplanes there, that promoted, you know, the connection between AirShare and the Ryder Cup and the PGA of America. And we feel like that will pay dividends for us down the road for sure.
Love it. So talk about why a strategic partnership. You know, we talked about some of the benefits of the sectionals with the PGA and obviously the way that you guys were able to activate for Ryder. Talk about why it was more important for you guys to make this league or organizational association rather than aligning with, say, like an individual golfer everybody knows because they're a quasi household name. Even though sometimes it's, you know, sometimes the guys who you expect to make a showing don't always cut, you know, don't always have a great day or a great weekend. Right. So,
yeah. And we experienced that. This is a perfect example, unfortunately. Yeah, our approach was, you know, there within our industry, there's a lot of involvement with golf, but it's typically on the golfer side. My belief was, we had a huge opportunity around the property angle for us to create a, you know, differentiation around being involved with the sport, but in a way that is unique in comparison to what our competitors are doing. And for a variety of reasons, not just that we wanted to be different, but when it comes to the benefits associated with being with a property versus a player, that, you know, you take the Ryder Cup, for example. Everybody loves the Ryder Cup. Unfortunately, the U.S. didn't win, but it's, you know, it's one of the most incredible competitions to watch or to attend, you know, really in any sport. And so regardless of who's playing, you still have a strong affinity for the event and wanting to pay attention to, you know, how the U.S. is doing. And whether you're a casual fan or a diehard fan, you're engaged. And the same with the PGA Championship. You know, it's a major. Every year people look forward to it. You know, there's a, you know, certain magic associated with being able to attend a major, and certainly the players, you know, take those, you know, even more seriously than, you know, a standard tour event. And so for us to be associated with those properties, that regardless of, you know, how players are performing, knowing that people that love golf, love these events, that inherently is less risky for us, but also gives us an opportunity to align with something, you know, again, that has that emotional attachment that isn't dependent on, you know, the individual performance of a golfer. Whereas when you are sponsoring golfers or really players in any sport, you are taking a chance that their performance may not necessarily be consistent across the board year to year. You also have other, you know, risks associated with, you know, social media or, you know, anything that, you know, that individual may do that could tarnish that, you know, that relationship or that association. So there's more risk now on that side of things than there ever was. But especially in golf, when you think about the number of golfers who consistently have been playing at a high level, at a very competitive level year to year, very small, you know, there's very, very few Tiger Woods come along or Jack Nicklaus's that, you know, come along that are consistently great year to year. And we've seen that, you know, over the course of the last 20 years where there's been, you know, golfers that have risen up and you think they're going to sustain that level for a while. And then, you know, the next thing you know, they're missing cuts and, you know, maybe they're not playing as well as they used to. So, you know, for us, we wanted to establish a consistent association with the properties because we knew that, you know, that emotional attachment's never going to wane.
Yeah, I love that. What is it about golf from the demographics that you know about the people who tune in to professional golf and watch tournament level play, an alignment with the people who show up as fans that actually attend, and just golfers in general that you kind of knew would align and line up for you guys with the AirShare brand?
Yeah, well, with most properties that we look at, really, you know, any kind of opportunities, we always know that there's going to be a certain amount of, there's really a certain segment of, you know, fan base or viewership that aren't going to be potential customers for us just because of the nature of the price points associated with our solutions. But what we did know was golf index is extremely high with the clientele that we're trying to reach and our existing customer base. So our feeling was, well, we know we fly customers every day, it seems like, to different golf destinations to go play. We know that, you know, that while there are a lot of people that watch and play golf, the higher level that join more of the exclusive country clubs or that are going on, you know, the premium golf vacations, I'm sure that, you know, you talk about quite a bit. Those are the level of people that we know are the right prospects for us, because they're paying a lot of money to join these exclusive clubs. They're investing a lot of their time and money in going to play different clubs throughout the country, especially ones that are, you know, that are harder to play and require travel. And we'd see a ton of our customers that utilize our services to go on those types of trips. And so it just made sense for us to do a kind of a deeper dive into the sport and have a stronger connection with it on the professional level, in addition to the local clubs, which is really an important part of the platform that we're building. So it really just made sense for us when you thought about all the different aspects of the sport and how it intertwines within private aviation. It just was a natural for us to have a, you know, stronger relationship with the sport.
That's awesome. And as CMO, how are you leveraging the PGA partnership across other channels? Are you guys creating a marketing campaign, video commercials, other types of assets? Like, how does this become a campaignable moment for you guys, other than just in these tentpole moments like Ryder or the championship?
Yeah, the foundation of our partnership is around the PGA of America, which is the, you know, again, kind of the national governing body, so to speak, of these clubs, and then the section partnerships associated with them. So the way that we activate the PGA of America is really on a national scale when we're promoting AirShare across the country. Everybody's familiar with the PGA of America and the PGA Championship, Ryder Cups, obviously, when those events are occurring, but those start to get a little heavier as the events are approaching. But what we really liked was the ability to talk about our association with the PGA of America really every day throughout the year. You know, this is this is our tentpole property that we're associating with. And then also having the ability to align the brand with local clubs and local communities and demonstrating our support for their clubs and growing the sport in those areas was important as well. And so there really are multi-levels to how we're activating this year round. And that will become the focal point, you know, continuing, you know, as we go on past the Ryder Cup. Now we'll have the PGA Championship over the next few years, and we'll build up to the Ryder Cup in 29. But the crown jewel really is the association with the sport through the PGA of America that we'll activate now year round. Not only, you know, again, through some of our national media, but also local media and those strategic areas that we're trying to grow all of our different solutions in.
That's awesome. So your background, like we talked about, is in sports marketing. You talked about being more of a bats and sticks player yourself when we were talking about the soccer background. How do you see sports marketing as a broader strategy integrating with AirShare's strategy for the future? You know, you could think of other, let's say, sports that kind of lend itself naturally to an affluent customer base. Yep. I think about F1, you know, there's probably others. Do you guys see an expansion into other sports as part of your strategy moving forward?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, and we've been involved with other sports in the past, and, you know, in the future, we expect to as well. We also have to be cognizant that not everyone loves golf. You know, the people that love golf are extremely passionate about the sport, probably more than any other. But we know that there's, you know, other sports fans out there that, you know, gravitate towards other types of events or other sports that we want to have a presence in. And then, you know, going beyond sports into other forms of entertainment or, you know, culinary opportunities, whatever it may be, that provide opportunities for us to entertain guests or to associate with brands that we feel like are on par with ours. you know, from a luxury standpoint. But I'm very bullish on sports marketing. I think being able to associate your brand with, again, that emotional attachment that the people have with the sports that they love or the athletes that they love, you know, something that's extremely powerful. And so we'll continue to do that. We'll be choosy, you know, when it comes to the ones that, you know, we decide to pursue. You know, the ones that you've mentioned, you know, certainly opportunities we've looked at. I would say the specifics around those opportunities haven't been right for us, but we'll continue to explore those for sure. And we've got some, you know, we're actively looking at now that we'll be expanding beyond golf. So we're excited about those.
Awesome. All right. So let's pivot a little bit into your personal experience as a traveler. Yeah. Are you a big fan of golf from a player perspective? Do you get out there and hit the sticks yourself?
You know, I used to quite a bit. I'd like to again. Body's started to break down as I've gotten older. I need to have a little work done on one of my shoulders before I can get back out there. It's not been fun. I've already had one done. But yeah, I mean, you know, certainly had taken golf trips, you know, in the past, and you know, I've got kids that play, you know, so I've got a lot of incentive to get back out there. I'm just not quite the incentive to go back under the knife again, but I will soon. But, you know, in the past, you know, we've gone on several, you know, golf trips and played at different places. And you know, throughout my career, I've had great opportunities to, you know, play in different courses. And, but my, I think probably my favorite one is still probably the first official golf trip that I actually took was, I mentioned I went to University of Missouri, and for one spring break, we actually drove to Las Vegas with a group of guys. And golf was not the primary reason we went to Vegas, I'll admit. But a friend of ours had a connection to Las Vegas Country Club. And, you know, it's a pretty prestigious course there. Now it's been overtaken by all these other courses that have been built. You know, this was quite a few years ago. But, you know, back then it was a pretty big deal to be able to play there. So, you know, for, you know, four guys in college to be able to go play, you know, a course like that, you know, when we're experiencing, you know, a lot of fun being in Vegas. So that was one I'll never forget for sure.
And how about as a fan, are you like a guy that likes to go to Waste Management, or, you know, we have the Farmers down here in Torrey Pines in San Diego, which is a great club. So outside of the ones where, you know, you had an unfair advantage because you guys were a flagship sponsor, has there been any that you've really enjoyed attending as a spectator that you kind of built in like a destination trip around?
Yeah, you know, it wasn't, again, luckily it was not necessarily my trip. I was invited to go, but I did get to attend the Masters.
Oh, wow. Years ago, yeah.
Which was definitely a bucket list sporting event that, you know, I wanted to experience at some point. And you always go into events like that thinking, well, it can't possibly be as amazing as everybody makes it sound. And when you get there, it is, you know, and it's the Ryder Cup was different in that. That was about the experience of what the competition was. You know, you've got the U.S. versus Europe, and there's a lot of buildup to it. It doesn't happen every year. And obviously, you know, we had some rowdy spectators at the event. It's a different experience, you know, culturally. The Masters, complete opposite. You know, it's a meticulous course. It's, you know, the experience of being there is just so wildly different in terms of it, you know, the magic quality of being at that course and seeing, you know, players performing at the absolute highest level individually with an incredible amount of pressure. But, you know, there's, you know, the atmosphere is different. You know, it's got so much tradition and so much pageantry associated with it. You know, it really became probably one of the most favorite events that, you know, I've attended. And I was excited to be able to do that. It's not something you get to do every year. So that certainly is my favorite, you know, that I've been able to go to several PGA championships and other events, but I think the Ryder Cup and the Masters certainly will be difficult to top.
What is the best part about flying private? You know, I know a lot of us have kind of, you know, the Hollywood version of it, of what we see in movies or what we see, you know, influencers that get to do it, kind of touting. But, you know, there's, and a lot of people think that the gap between flying first class or business and going to private is like an astronomical gap. And with the recent, you know, technological innovations and some of the products that you guys offer, like the Jet Card or fractional ownership, it is becoming more and more attainable to your, you know, sub 1% or, you know, audience. Can you talk about, you know, like if you could talk to that consumer that is flying first class or on the putting a lot of mileage down in first class cabins each year and has been thinking about bumping up to private, what are some of the things that they can expect, both from a lifestyle perspective and just, you know, why is it a better experience?
Yeah, honestly, it's night and day. I love to say, you know, well, it's not that, you know, much different. You're still fundamentally doing the same things, but in reality, it's so amazing to be able to have the convenience and flexibility and frankly, the time savings, you know, associated with flying private. You know, that's the simple things, like when you're going to take off and you can pull your car right up onto the ramp and unload your luggage and hop right on the plane or not, parking your car and then getting on a bus or a train and then going to the terminal and going through security and doing all of that. And then getting there and finding out your plane's delayed and your next flight's not for 4 hours. I mean, it's completely different. You're pulling right up, you're getting on the plane. With us, you have the flexibility to make changes on the fly, you know, as you're going about your day. So if you're flying for business and you have a meeting that's running long, you have the flexibility to change the time when you're taking off to go to the next destination or going home. The same, you know, if you're flying leisure, you know, you want to stay a little bit longer, you do so. And it's the same thing coming back. You know, you think about the time that you spend traveling that doesn't involve the actual traveling part, you know, from the minute you leave your house to when you're on that airplane and it's taking off. In many cases, that's hours of time on both sides. And when you can eliminate that aspect and you get more time to spend at the destination you're going to and be able to relax on the plane and you have, you know, the snacks that you want or the beverages that you want, you know, on the plane and being able to not worry about what's going on around you, it's pretty amazing. And then with the Wi-Fi advances that we have now, whether it's business or leisure, you can still be online while you're in the air and you can either get work done or, you know, kids can be watching movies or, you know, whatever it may be. You're still staying connected while you're in the air as well. So it's pretty difficult to beat that experience.
Yeah, no, I could only imagine. And I think, you know, you're speaking, I think, correctly to the consumer set that you're talking about. Like when you get to a certain level of income, really the only thing that you can't buy more of is time, right? It's like, that's the resource. So every moment that you can optimize your schedule, spend more time either being productive or spending it with the people who you love or spending it like how, you know, like wealthy people are just like us, you know, they only get so much time to, go on vacation and enjoy recreation. Like you mentioned, that's one of the reasons why they're successful, right? Is because they work very hard. So being able to optimize those moments and being able to spend more time at the destination, like we always joke at Lost In, it's, you know, the things that are exciting to cover are not necessarily like, how do you get to the destination or where you sleep at night? You know, that's kind of part of it, but really what most people are looking for is, you know, what are you going to do when you get there? Where are you going to eat and what are you going to do? And, you know, to make that other component of the travel, which sometimes can feel like a chore, more of part of the experience, seems like for those who have the ability to do so, it's a good thing to think about optimizing.
Absolutely. It's the thing that ends up when you're talking to customers, kind of getting them over the, you know, the hurdle of the cost associated with it really is when it gets down to thinking about all the time that you're saving. You know, when, to your point, when you have, you know, a 4 or 5 day weekend and typically if you're going to go anywhere, you know, far away or exotic, you're probably thinking about, well, two of those days are going to be taken up flying, you know, or traveling. And when it's only, you know, half a day, and you're able to experience more of where you're going or what you're going to do, that there's just a tremendous value placed on that. And that's where it really becomes, you know, worth the expense, you know, to be able to do it, you know, and the people that have the means, especially coming out of COVID and all the challenges that were associated with that, that really we've seen a tremendous amount of growth just across the industry of people that are flying private now that maybe in the past had a little bit of, you know, just concern about what the cost was and could they justify it or not. And when you get a taste of it, it's hard to go back.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, I know we're coming up on the end of the time that I have with you today, so I want to give you an opportunity to plug and let the Lost In audience know where they can learn more about AirShare. Also, if you want to plug the 25th anniversary and your guys' major milestone and what you're looking forward to with the next 25, why don't we give you a moment to do that and tell us where you'd like the audience to learn more about AirShare.
Sure. Well, first, thanks for having me on. It was great to
have you.
Anybody who's interested in any of our services, I'd ask you to go to flyershare.com and you'll be able to learn more about everything that we offer in terms of the solutions that I mentioned earlier in the podcast. And if you have additional questions, there are ways for you to reach out to us and we'd be happy to talk to you about different options to fly private wherever you may be going or however you may be using it. And yes, this past month, we celebrated our 25th anniversary, very proud of what we've accomplished over the last 25 years. And especially in this industry where you see a lot of our competitive operators that come and go because it is an exciting industry to be a part of, and but not necessarily the most stable. Having the stability that we've been able to experience over the last 25 years is a testament to, you know, what we've been able to achieve and the ownership that we've had over the years. And now with a new partner involved with the company, we're excited about what the next 25 years look like for us. And we would love for everyone out there listening to be a part of it.
Awesome. Well, with that, Andy, I will let you get on. I think we got you out here right on the dot. So thanks so much for coming on and we'll chat again soon. All right.
Sounds great. Thanks, Dylan.
Cheers. Thanks, bud. All right, everybody. Well, I hope you enjoyed the interview that I had with Andy today. Super exciting to learn a little bit more about the private aviation space and companies like AirShare that are trying to roll out lots of ways for consumers to get involved in the private aviation space. I think what was most prescient for me is this idea of not being able to buy back your time. You know, when you get to a certain level of success, every moment that you can spend doing the things that you love with the people that you love doing them with, and especially around travel and leisure, I feel like those are those moments of investment that really optimize your life and make things that much more of a great experience so you can be more focused, well-rested, and excited to do the work that you have to do when you get back to the office or get back into the challenge of whatever you have to do between those moments of experiencing travel and being out there and enjoying all the amazing adventures that the world has to offer. So with that, I will go ahead and let you guys loose. Thank you so much for tuning in to The Layover on the Lost In Network. We shoot and deliver these videos every Wednesday at 4 p.m. West Coast. So thank you again for tuning in. If this is the first time you're seeing the show, don't forget to give us a subscribe, like, follow, wherever you're watching. If you're listening, if you review the show on a podcast platform of your choice, that's where we organically find a larger audience. And if there's a golf aficionado out there in your life, someone in the business travel world who you think is ready to take the leap to private, or just somebody who you think would enjoy the conversation that I had with Andy today, don't forget to share the show. And with that, we will see you again shortly. Thanks so much for tuning in.